As a business owner of an aquaculture company, how can you take the first step to be profitable and sustainable at the same time? That's what we're going to be talking about in this episode. Hello, and welcome to the Business of Aquaculture podcast. This is the podcast for the sustainable business movement in the aqua farming and ocean ranching industries. This podcast aims to amplify the voices of entrepreneurs addressing the United Nations Global Goals, aka Sustainable Development Goals number 14, to conserve and sustainably use the oceans and the seas. Listen in to fellow business aquaculturists in their journey in this new model of food production, of making their business sustainable and help the ocean's ecology while also making a profit all at the same time. Get inspired to learn how even small to medium businesses can make an impact to save the seas, leave a legacy, and have a better quality of life. One of our goals is you take away a nugget of wisdom that will help your business move from the Industrial Revolution to Business 5.0. Our vision is that of collaboration in the aquaculture industry. I'm Lourdes Gant, your host.
As an aquaculture business, how do you focus on public relations, education, and sustainability? This episode is dedicated to answering that question. Welcome to another episode of the Business of Aquaculture podcast. This episode, I'm delighted to interview Emily D'Souza. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm really delighted that you had time to talk with us today. So Emily is a Portuguese-Canadian scientist and travel and food writer. Seaside with Emily is a unique space for coastal travelers and seafood lovers. This platform serves as an online education space where she aims to teach her followers about healthy oceans, sustainable seafood, and culinary adventures focused on the rise of pesca tourism or seafood tourism. Welcome again to the show, Emily.
Yeah, thank you.
So I am really delighted that there's like a, I call it edutainment, education and entertainment, the way that you do your business. So maybe you can give our audience a little bit of a background. How did you get into this? What made you got inspired to be in the sustainable seafood business?
Yeah, definitely. I love that description of it. I guess I got into this really kind of through my family roots. It's how I always go back to it, even before I think myself, I realized it. But basically, I did my undergrad in environmental governance, and I was always interested in the ocean and marine sciences. I'm a big scuba diver. My family is from the Azores Islands off of Portugal. And so I think I've just always had this like pull to the ocean. And while I was in my undergrad, kind of two big things happened. The first one being that while I was doing a lot of volunteering in marine conservation spaces, I noticed that there was this narrative against seafood, this sort of thought process that if you wanted to protect the oceans, you shouldn't be eating seafood. And then the other thing that happened was that the university where I studied is called Canada's Food University. We have a $100 million research institute full of brilliant scientists who are doing a lot of great work on food security and sustainable food systems, and nobody was looking at seafood. And so those two things combined, I was just thinking, you know, this narrative that you can't eat seafood and love the oceans is definitely wrong. And approaching sustainable food systems and global food security, but leaving out seafood, which is a major part of the equation, just seemed crazy to me. And so those two things inspired me to go to grad school. And then while I was in grad school, I really noticed this disconnect between what was happening in fishery science and the work that I was doing in academia, and then what the general public actually knew about seafood. I would come home, I would tell family and friends about what I was working on, and I would just hear a variety of different responses like, oh, you know, well, you shouldn't eat tuna because, you know, mercury and like tinned seafood, I would never eat that. And just all these things that I realized the public was just so misinformed on, because the seafood industry notoriously just hasn't done a very good job of communicating. And so I thought, you know what? I have a little bit of a following on social media. Maybe I should start talking about fishery science on social media. I had a travel blog that I started way back in 2015. I was feeling a bit unfulfilled, even though I kept doing it while I was in school. And so because I can't do anything halfway, right before COVID, I actually rebranded the travel blog. I changed the name. I overhauled everything about my business. And I decided to focus on talking about sustainable seafood on those platforms and seafood travel, because I still wanted to keep a bit of that travel component. But seafood really was the core focus. And luckily for me, it's worked out. It's been very successful. There's a huge appetite for this type of content. And it really confirmed my suspicions that the public is misinformed, but they don't want to be. They really want to know more about seafood. They want to eat seafood, but they want to know more about where their seafood is coming from and how it's being caught. And so using social media as the vehicle to communicate that information has been really, really effective and really, really fun.
Well, we're so happy that you're doing what you're doing. There's absolutely this misinformation and miscommunications that's been happening in the industry. So with that, I also really admire the topic that you specifically specialize on, because as you know, we have a lot of, as I mentioned already, miscommunication and even just misinterpretation of what's going on in the industry. So what is your vision for our sustainable seafood?
Overall, I would have to say better transparency and communication within the industry. I mean, I think that's really the ethos of my business and why I do what I do, is that I want to make information more accessible. I want to mobilize knowledge. I want to engage people. And I want to do so in a way that makes them feel part of the conversation, that makes them feel part of the community, and doesn't make them feel intimidated or like they're not smart enough because they don't understand. You know, notoriously, the way that we speak in academia is not very accessible to the average person. The way that we're trained to write papers or give presentations, there's a lot of jargon. It's a lot of stuff that goes over people's heads. Even when I hear people in other fields of academia, there's often times where I don't fully understand what's going on. And so I've really made it my mission to disseminate that information and make it accessible. And I try to think of all the content that I put out there as if I'm just having a conversation with my friend and they've asked me a question about seafood and how I would explain it to them in a way that makes sense, using metaphors, like using language that they understand, using social media, because it's a platform that everybody is already on anyway. And so I think, like, for the industry overall, embracing that would be would be wonderful if we could see all these different seafood and aquaculture companies with just gorgeous social media accounts and being engaged in, on TikTok and explaining complicated things like fish in, fish out ratios and whatnot in a way that is easier for the average person to understand. That would be a transformation that would be wonderful to witness in the industry.
I like what you said about feeling like you're talking to a friend and being part of the conversation and community. I think that's the big word now, where the digital decade is just really yearning for that connection, because the Zoom era has really kind of in a way connected us but disconnected us at the same time. But also mentioning about, you know, how fisheries and aquaculture can work together, because that leads me to my next question. What do you see as the future trend in the sustainable aquaculture business?
I mean, aquaculture is growing. Nobody can argue with that. It's becoming increasingly more important for our food sources, for our worlds, for our economies. And I think one part of that that isn't talked about a lot is what's driving that growth. And of course, there are a variety of different factors, but the big one that I always focus on and what I've been speaking about a lot this year is the rise of the young seafood consumer. So millennials and Gen Z, which are my primary target audience, they are eating a lot more seafood. Seafood consumption increased last year alone with millennials by 30%. I like to say that seafood is really the perfect protein for young people because of the values that young people hold when they're making purchasing decisions, whether it's food or anything else. Young people really have this concern about the environment and sustainability. And when it comes to seafood, oftentimes sustainability even trumps other concerns like nutritional value or affordability. You know, before we know if it's healthy or if we have enough money to buy it, we want to know if it's sustainable and what its environmental impact was. Because even if it checks those other two boxes, if it's not sustainable or we can't easily determine if it's sustainable, young people just aren't going to buy it. But young people want to eat more seafood. We're seeing this transition, especially amongst young people, away from eating, you know, things like meat. They're really trying to embrace a more like flexitarian or climatarian diet where they're eating in a way that's better for the planet. So we're seeing a lot of them take meat off their plates. Some of them, you know, transitioning to veganism or vegetarianism, but some of them recognizing that seafood might be an option, or they're wondering if it's an option. But again, that information just hasn't always been easily accessible. And because this transition is happening right now, there's just such an opportunity in the seafood and aquaculture space to engage with these young consumers. And I think to really change the future of the seafood landscape, because when we think about millennials and Gen Z, they're young consumers right now, but they're also beginning to raise the next generation of seafood consumers. And so if we can engage and communicate with young people right now and lock them in as, you know, sustainable seafood consumers for life, then not only have we captured this group, but then when they have kids, they're going to raise their kids growing up eating sustainable seafood because they know it's a sustainable and healthy and affordable protein source. But we just need to make sure that we're communicating that so that that seafood consumption continues to rise amongst that demographic.
Thank you very much for bringing that forth in terms of young consumers. It's fascinating that you mentioned about this new, I guess, group of people wherein focusing really on environment and sustainability, how the younger generation are more aware in terms of what's going on, which leads me to my next question. What's one thing you can advise a leader in this industry?
I mean, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I think the idea of communicating and being more transparent is so, it's more important now than ever. I mean, like I said, people are seeking out this information. They want to know. It really will be a barrier to purchasing if people don't have this information. But beyond communicating sustainability information, I think another piece that really needs to be communicated a bit better in the industry, in a lot of different industries, not just seafood, is the why behind it. So this is something that I do a lot with seafood companies and people that I do communications training with, is getting to the why. And Simon Sinek is sort of this thought leader who is the master of why and talks about finding your why behind what you do. And people who work in seafood, particularly in aquaculture, I think have very strong whys. It's not always an easy industry to be in. There's a lot of obstacles. There are a lot of barriers. There's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of forced innovation that requires, you know, unlocking new levels of thinking and creativity. And of course, there are, you know, public perception issues that come about in aquaculture. And so it's not an easy industry to be in by any means. And so I feel like people who work in aquaculture have very strong whys. They have very strong and particular reasons for getting out of bed every morning and continuing to do what they do. But that's often not, that story gets lost, I think, in maybe, you know, the hustle and bustle. And there's so many different things coming our way with, like I said, things like public perception issues and regulations and vegan and plant-based alternatives. And everybody's trying to do everything at once. Like, why is it important to communicate our why? And I think you alluded to this right when we started talking, this idea of connection and how, you know, Zoom and COVID connected us in different ways. And another thing that young people particularly want is connection. And I know that social media and virtual connections, yes, they are different than in-person connections, but building that connection with young people, again, is just another way to really engage them and make them part of this seafood community. And so I think for other leaders in the space, thinking really hard about your why and then communicating that is really powerful. The aquaculture industry has really phenomenal stories to tell. I mean, it's innovative, it's creative. It really is changing our food landscapes. It's changing our world from, you know, the smallest micro scale, small artisanal operations to, you know, to larger operations that really are exporting massive amounts of affordable and highly nutritious seafood. There's great stories in all of these. And I think we just really need to do a better job of communicating them.
Well, thank you once again. And Normally, I just do three questions, but because you've been so engaging, I wanted to ask one last question, because one of the demographics of the audience who reaches my podcast are actually university students, so also the younger generation. So, which leads me to my question, what would you advise younger generation in terms of strengthening their personal branding? Because you do that brilliantly.
It's such an important question, and I think it's also something that's becoming increasingly more important in this world. You know, having a LinkedIn page is almost not enough anymore. Like, there's almost an expectation for everybody to have a really established digital presence, whether that is, you know, a really robust LinkedIn profile or some sort of other portfolio or personal website. I would build those things now. Don't wait. I know, I feel like people, especially university students, are very hesitant to, you know, why would I build a personal website? I haven't done anything yet. You know, I'm still in university. Just forget about that. Throw that out the window. Start now, because the longer you're online, the longer you have like a brand established, even if it is nothing for a year or the first couple of years, there's no harm in setting those vehicles up already for when you do have things to post on there. And at the end of the day, any field that you go into, the first thing any employer is going to do is Google your name. And so you really want to be in control of what comes up when they do that. And building a really good personal brand is a great way to control that narrative and really put your best self forward to show, here are the different projects that I've done, things that, you know, you maybe necessarily can't fit into a one-page CV or resume. You can build out into a portfolio that shows your personality, that shows off of your work. And like I said, it's really important, because I think things are very competitive these days. And having an established personal brand is just another way to set yourself apart from the crowd. And also, I think it gives you a lot of different options career-wise. When I started setting up my own personal brand, suddenly things shifted from where I was always reaching out to companies and brands, where they were reaching out to me because they knew where to find me. They knew how to get a hold of me. They had already seen my work because I put it out there. And so I think just putting it out there, getting it established, don't wait. It will only serve to benefit you in the long term.
Thank you so much, Emily. So my biggest takeaway from our conversation today was I learned a lot of terms from what you were saying, even though I think I heard them before. It just landed on me today from our conversation, you know, pescatourism, flexitarian, climatarian. So these are buzzwords that I know, I guess people heard before, but just really doesn't land as much. So that landed for me today. So thank you again. How can our audience get in touch with you?
Yeah, thank you. So you can find me. I'm on all social platforms. My website is seasidewithemily.com. And then at seasidewithemily is my handle on most things, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, all of it.
Thanks again, Emily. To all our subscribers, do leave a review of the podcast so we can get more people to become aware of the value our guests are providing in these conversations. If you're new to the podcast, I'd like to hear from you. Thanks, everyone. Thanks again, Emily. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you are inspired from this episode. Do take a moment and share this with your friends and colleagues, and rate and review the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'd love to know what your biggest takeaway from this conversation has been. What are you going to do differently? Please share your thoughts across social media and tag us. For links and show notes for this episode, visit our website, www.sustainableaquaculture.ca/podcast. Thank you again. I hope you will join me on the next episode, and together we can help create a better business in aquaculture.